This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the morning run on BFM 89.9, the business station. It's Monday, the 3rd of September. I'm Melissa Idris. I'm going to be keeping you company all the way till 10 o'clock. With me this morning, we have Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
How was your weekend? Long weekend back? Everyone rejuvenated?
Look, I think every weekend should be a three-day weekend. I think that should be passed into law. Next parliamentary sitting. Yeah.
Well, let's bring it up to our MPs, right? But this is, a momentous day for us here at BFM because it is our very first broadcast from our swanky new offices in Menara Kent TTDI.
Yeah, very exciting, very new. All of us got up super extra early today. And we're already up very early.
Well, that was just because I was worried that I couldn't open the office, but I managed to get in fine. And I've never had so many people in the studios in the morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning. We've got all the tech guys on standby. We've got David Chiu on standby as well. So there you go. Just in case anything happens to transmission, we've got you covered.
Yeah, and just to give you guys a heads up, what does this mean for you? Well, you do not have to adjust anything. You can still catch us at 89.9. Our WhatsApp number is still the same, 018-789-8899. But we do have a new phone number that's 77-33-2900. Again, that's 77-33-2900.
So update your contacts when you want to WhatsApp us and when you want to call in. Those are the new numbers to call. Also, tomorrow is going to be a huge day for us. In fact, this is going to be a series of big days. Tomorrow is another big day. We are turning 10. BFM turns 10 and we're going to celebrate that birthday, the momentous occasion, with a whole host of special programming for you throughout the day.
So that means we'll be standard 4. 10 years old is standard 4, right?
Yes, standard 4.
Yeah, not quite entering our puberty stages yet, but we're getting there.
Maintain that youthful, childlike enthusiasm. Last night, guys, we had the Asian Games closed. So last night saw the closing ceremony for the 18th Asian Games in Jakarta. And this was after 2 weeks and 40 sports in competition. In fact, the tournament went so well that Indonesia now wants to bid for the Olympics 2032.
Yeah, they made the bid for the Olympics. Actually, I think Indonesia defied expectations to host a smooth games. And, you know, I think there were 17,000 athletes and officials and was second in size only to the Olympics.
I didn't know that the Asian Games is actually just, I guess, the next biggest sporting tournament after the Olympics.
Yeah, and so huge. It's actually quite a lot of people who attended it.
Yeah, because those who win gold in their respective disciplines, some of them can then gain qualification into the Olympics as well. So for Malaysia, we ended with 7 gold medals, 13 silver and 16 bronze medals. Our 7th gold coming from the men's squash team. So big congratulations to all our athletes over there.
You know, there was the MPV, the most valuable player, was Japanese swimmer Rikako Iki. She became the first woman to sweep up 6 gold medals at the Games. In fact, I believe she is set to be the face of the Tokyo Olympics in 2020.
I think you meant MVP, right? MPV to Mami Kala.
Is it? MVP, most valuable player. What is an MPV?
A multi-purpose vehicle.
Thank you, guys.
Someone's getting ready for motherhood.
It's the mom soccer van, isn't it? Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of hosting international events, we have also Bangkok hosting a preparatory meeting for the next UN climate conference tomorrow. In fact, now the city itself is in focus because of its vulnerability to climate change. According to a World Bank report, Bangkok is projected to be one of the world's hardest hit urban areas for floods. So about 40% of Bangkok is expected to be inundated by 2030.
That's quite scary, apparently. Currently, the capital is apparently sinking 1 cm to 2 cm a year. And there's a risk of a massive flooding in the near future. I guess, with the whole how things are, the roads and construction how infrastructure is built there. I mean, it's scary. And Bangkok is definitely a favorite tourist destination for a lot of us.
Yeah, and you know how in Thailand, they have those floating pasars and all that.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Bangkok will be like one of these big floating markets.
I knew you were going to make that joke.
Come on, I mean, can you imagine like paddling your boat down to Paragon?
Chatuchak? Or Siam Paragon?
I love Chatuchak though. Oh my God.
I love Platinum Mall.
There we go.
Bangkok is now known as the Venice of the East. So it's gradually sinking. All right, well, we'll come back with more news and analysis. In fact, after this, we're going to be reviewing the latest Merdeka ads. Do they make you feel more patriotic? Next on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 10 minutes past 6 o'clock this Monday morning, the 3rd of September. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh, broadcasting live from BFM's brand new studios here in Kent TTDI. Mohan says good morning on WhatsApp. He says welcome to the new place, but he thinks there's no clarity in our voices. Unfortunately, we will be doing all we can to make sure that the transmission goes well this morning. We have our tech guys on standby. I do understand that over the weekend there was a little bit of some disruption in the transmission, and we, I guess, thank you all for your patience during whenever we were having some of those disruptions. But so far, so good. And I hope it continues for the rest of the morning. That was Bill Withers with Lovely Day, you just heard there earlier. And I don't know whether you guys have seen the Merdeka ad of this, of a certain chicken rice restaurant. I won't say which one. But it delightfully parodies what is a typical Malaysian ad. So if I could just explain it, if you haven't seen it, it's there's the Malay, Chinese, Indian men and women, and then they also have thrown in Sabahan, Sarawakian in the mix. And the only way you know how they're Sabahan and Sarawakian is they've got their traditional costumes on. So it parodies what makes, you know, of all the how many years that we've had these Merdeka ads, the composition of ethnic races, wearing traditional ads, bersalam, salaman, and all that. And it really makes fun of that in a really, I guess, charming way. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah. And also they threw in a young kid as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it I guess it's also the traditional. At first they're wearing normal clothes, and after that they threw in the traditional costumes, and then they threw in the flag to berkibar the flag. Right. Yeah.
Well, okay, I feel left out now because I have not watched that particular ad. But I think the idea is that because we have had, you know, these series of patriotic ads, I guess the risk is that it has become this cookie cutter of sorts. You know, so there is this formula that they follow.
That's
now,
right.
Whether or not that risks, you know, diluting that Merdeka message, you know, because we get bombarded with that same formula year in, year out.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
Do you think also it's because from school? Because last week we got a message from our kids' school saying that, you know, we're going to have a Merdeka party on Thursday. So please get all your kids to wear the traditional clothes to come to school the next day to celebrate Merdeka.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, you know, what I liked so much about this ad was really that it made fun of what we think we need in a Merdeka ad, right? So the other ad that I came across over the Merdeka weekend was really about, I think it was Petronas's Merdeka ad. Mm. I was watching it. This I thought was really a wonderful way of, I guess, a new take on Merdeka ads. Imagine, it must be difficult for these advertising companies to come out with fresh ideas. So this year's Merdeka ad, I believe it was, they gave children cameras and they said go out and take pictures, and it was really to see how to appreciate how children see the good in everything and encourages us to view Malaysia from a different perspective. And someone behind me in watching this said they all got no money one this year, no budget small is it. So for me, I feel that we're so ingrained in this typical Merdeka patriotic ad that when we're given something different, we feel like we can't cope or can't digest it.
Well, you know, again, going back to the challenge that these content makers have in trying to spruce it up or jazz it up every single year, right? Now, I understand the importance because it does provide us with this touch point, right? You know, as fleeting as it may be, it gives us this touch point whereby, you know, we can just encapsulate this so-called Merdeka spirit in a 30-second ad or a 5-minute shorty, right?
Right.
And I get that. But, you know, whether or not it, you know, really encapsulates the complexities of the Malaysian identity, that's a whole different story. You know, that's a lot of a bigger ask
really?
To try to encapsulate
okay,
it in
so,
30 seconds.
So I think one of the reasons why advertisers feel they need to cram all the races into this One Merdeka ad is because, you know, we feel like we're not represented if we don't see our ethnicity on air.
And then all the angry posts will show up online.
I think they want to be PC about it because there's the expectation, you know, they want to be politically correct. If they don't, then they'll get backlash and then there'll be angry posts. Why did you do that? Why did you not include this? You know,
And to be fair, sometimes it's not the advertising companies, it's the clients, right? Yeah. They make the assumption that this is what the Malaysian public want. They want to see all these races. But I think, in fact, it's really quite refreshing to see, you know, a different take on this kind of multiracial composition ads.
Yeah. Look, and as tough as it is for these creative agencies to come up with a spruced up message come August 31st every year, I think it's more paramount and it's the bigger task whereby individuals then have to continue in that spirit all year long. I think that's the bigger
aspect.
Yeah, so
not seasonal.
Yeah, actually Maxis's Merdeka ad this year is on animals, endangered animals, as opposed to, you know, people. So, yeah.
There you go. But, you know, I'm sure someone will have something to say about it. In fact, we would love to hear what you think. Have the recent slew of Merdeka ads made you feel more patriotic? And which were your favourite ones? We'd love to hear from you. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. It's 6:15 now, and after this, we're going to be looking at cash incentives. Do they work as an effective motivator for athletes to excel? We'll discuss next on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Heartbreaker by Girls there. 6:22 right now. It's Monday the 3rd of September. I'm Melissa Idris with Joyce Goh and Tan Chung Han as we're broadcasting live from our brand new offices in Kent TDI. Thank you everyone for sending in your feedback saying that the volumes were a little low this morning. We hope we've rectified that. Thank you, Norm, for your WhatsApp. In fact, you can also join the conversation this morning at any point in time on our Twitter handle, which is at BFM Radio, or on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. Now, last night saw the closing ceremony of the 18th Asian Games in Jakarta, and the Malaysian contingent had met the best target of 7 gold, 13 silver, and 16 bronze medals. But still, guys, we have commentators saying that not even the extra monetary incentives offered by the Malaysian Athletics Federation could inspire the track and field athletes to excel at these games. What do you guys think about that?
I don't know. Do you think because of money, I'm sure they gave the best, right? And it's all about, I don't know, you can dangle the carrot and that with hopes that that would incentivize them to do better. I'm sure they gave their best, but unfortunately, for some of them, they just didn't make it
How much money? How big is this carrot?
Okay, the carrot is, 10,000 ringgit for a medal and 5,000 ringgit for national record breakers and 1,000 ringgit for a new games mark.
Yeah.
That's the carrot.
I mean, okay, look, when you consider the kind of money that's being bandied about in professional sports, right? It's astronomical, okay? Granted, 10,000 ringgit for our local athletes, not quite there, but if you consider other professional sports. But you would think, you would like to hope that these are secondary, though. These monetary considerations are secondary. You know, ultimately, you want there to be a tremendous love for that game and let that shine, and then money comes after. I give you this example.
What?
So, no.
What? You're talking to two Penangites in the studio.
So, I'll give you an example, okay? So, in the US, college football has just begun, okay? That's America. In football, guess what? Throughout your 4 years of playing collegiate sports, you are not allowed to get a single dime in terms of, say, sponsorships or monies. You can only get a scholarship from college. It's only if you make it onto the NFL. That's when you earn the mega bucks, right? So the idea is to foster that talent, foster that passion, make sure you can prove it on at this very competitive stage, and then you'll be rewarded.
But you see, there's a carrot at the end of the finishing line.
Sure.
You know, there's a scholarship. There's still something there, you know? There has to be something. I don't know, for them, for all these professionals.
So what's the difference between, say, professional athletes, right? So we have all these professional athletes who are gunning for multi-million prize money, but and then you have athletes who are competing for the nation, shouldn't they also be competing for that kind of kitty?
Yeah, no, I'm not speaking out against the kitty, but what I'm saying, you know, in the hierarchy of sporting ideals,
whether that should be right at the top.
Yeah, it's got to be secondary, though. Like, until you're proving yourselves, you know, at the top levels, you know, like the Cristiano Ronaldo's and the Messi's, or even the Azizul Hasni's of the world, right? Or the Nicole Davids or the Lee Chong Wei's, right? It's after you've proven yourself, the money will come.
Yeah, but that's their career, though, as athletes, yeah, right? Yeah. So they need to make some money out of it. I mean, whether it's now or later on, there's something. At least there's something there.
So again, the point is not that they should not be paid. I'm all for them getting paid. What I'm saying that in terms of the motivators, the catalysts for performance, that has got to be secondary.
So what would be the primary motivator in your mind then?
Well, you know, I guess
national pride.
Yeah, I'm going to sound really idealistic here. No,
it's okay. Yeah, it's so all good.
It's pride and also a sense of competition, right? No, knowing that you are really, really good in that particular discipline, I think that has got to trump the monetary considerations, right? Because if this person is just chasing it for the money, then it really dilutes these sporting ideals, right?
For
if
sure.
I may say so.
Well, tell us what you think. Our WhatsApp number
says the fat guy and behind a mic.
who may not be the professional athlete. Yeah. Let's just say that. Well, we'd love to hear from you. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899. Thank you, Stephen and Yasmin, for weighing in this morning. We've got the 6:30 News Bulletin coming up next. And to take you there, Sheryl Crow with A Change Will Do You Good. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Eric Clapton there with Crossroads. 6:40 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Adris with Joyce Go and Tan Chung Han. And thank you so much for your tweets and WhatsApps this morning. We have Azlina on Twitter with Joan Lee, as well as Ong Kian Ming wishing BFM happy birthday. Tomorrow we turn 10. We also have a couple of messages on WhatsApp as well.
Yeah, so thanks to Ro, who commented about whether or not money should be the primary motivator for professional sports. And he says, or he or she's, Ro says, we seem to be more motivated by food than money. Why not dangle some onde onde at the end of a stick as they run the 100 meters? I'll tell you this, though, the fat kids like me, let's sign me up for that, man. I'll run for some onde onde right now.
We also have Linda weighing in on her favorite Merdeka ad. She reckons, even as a Maxis subscriber, she reckons the Cellcom Merdeka ad is her favorite this year.
Yeah, and then we got politics/CA...
Stephen.
Oh, Stephen.
Stephen Chalula.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry. Anyways, so he says, going back to the sports story, saying that the potential ones are out there in schools, but the national body is indifferent. Again, this is in relation to potential sportsmen and women representing Malaysia.
All right, well, now moving on to a comment made by a PKR president-elect, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim. Now, he said that if he were the prime minister today, he too would face difficulties in managing and revitalising Malaysia's economy, given the massive national debt. And he said that being the country's number one post is no easy task at the moment, given the country's situation. But I guess, you know, besides that, zooming out, we wanted to ask the question, if it's harder to be a leader today than it was previously?
I think so. I think you just scrutinized a lot more, given like just social media, technology, everyone's looking, everyone has an input or has an opinion on how you should be, like what you should do, how you should lead, you know, it's just endless.
Yeah, for millennial speak, it's like people are more woke now, you know,
woke? So what's
yeah,
that?
Woke. It's like you're so aware about different things that woke. you can find offense with every single thing. Woke.
Hi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Welcome.
I thought woke was you are aware of the rights and you know you're.
But then you can kind of overcompensate and just, you know, get angry at every little thing. Look, that term government, right? It's become so toxic of late as well. Though you recall how perhaps, you know, some of us growing up, you know, talk about chita-chita to become the prime minister.
That right? Was your chita-chita?
Well, no, not really lah. Because, anyways, long story. I wanted to be a garbage collector for a while. Why?
Because that is a noble job.
Yeah, because you can hang out with the garbage truck. Anyways.
I think kids love that though.
Yeah, I loved it. Okay. Yeah. So like in the States as well, they ask, you know, kids who wants to become the prime minister of the United States, right? That may be like for previous generations, but now it's become so toxic. I was watching some of the commentary out of Australia as well. What, 6 prime ministers in 8 years? Mm. And they say, who on earth wants that job right now? Mm. You know, you get in there, chances are in a few months you get stabbed in the back, you know,
politics,
and then you'll be just viled by the population, right? So what's the point? So that's all these criticisms aimed at the leaders of the respective countries. Really, do you want it now in today's day and age? Not me.
Well, I understand that social media has made, as you say, Joyce, you know, made that top job more heavily scrutinized, right? But also, it makes it, it's almost democratic the way you're able to communicate, right? Think, I mean, for all his faults, Donald Trump has been able to communicate directly with the American populace and the global populace through Twitter, right? He's bypassed every single spokesperson, spokesplatform, and he's been able to communicate his thoughts, as incoherent as they sometimes may be, directly to people. And think about the Pope, right? Pope Francis able to do that. You think about all the great leaders of the world. The way they're able to do that is by communicating their message directly. So while social media makes you more heavily scrutinized, it's also opened up this platform for you to be a great leader.
Yeah, but at the same time with social media, then in this more globalized world, you have to manage a broader spectrum of expectations, though. I think that's what leaders have to take on board, and it is tremendously hard. So it's not just about framing right policies and then successfully executing it. Example, SST, as we'll speak about later on in the show in about half an hour from now. But then also, it's about managing the perceptions out there, right? So, if you ask me, I'm good. I'm not going to sign up for that. But unless if there's a big carrot at the end of the stick.
Yeah, like what kind of carrot?
Onde.
So the question is it easier to be a leader in the past?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Tell us what you think. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. It's 6:46 right now. After this, we're going to take a look at how many aides a minister needs. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, 6:50 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run. Melissa, Joyce and Han here with you this morning. Curtis Mayfield there with We're a Winner. We're all winners this morning, everyone, after the Asian Games, I think, closing its ceremony yesterday. So even if you didn't score a medal, still a winner. There's always next time. We're looking at comments made from the Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. He issued a directive to limit each minister to 10 personal aides. He's saying that there were several. This is according to comments made from the Malaysian Insight, quoting Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, saying that the Prime Minister issued this directive because there were some ministers who wanted more than that figure. In fact, you guys, in the previous administration, some ministers had 35 aides. 35 aides. This includes like personal aides and press aides and all that.
Yeah, you know, when this story came out, it made me wonder how many aides does a minister need to your job? Because I think, if I'm not mistaken, the aides will be on top of your ministry, like the staff.
Yeah, so these are personal aides, so to speak. Yeah.
Well, you know, we've got a WhatsApp coming in from Muhammad Nasir saying that, Hishamuddin, that was Hishamuddin, was Minister of Education, it was said that he had 11 pegawai khas, so 11 special officers.
Okay, so I guess 11 is not as bad as the 35 that we've been seeing.
Right.
But okay, this also comes after the education minister, the new education minister, Mazli Malik, requested to be given more officers. And he made the argument that this is because the higher education ministry was absorbed into the education ministry. Mm. So if you think about that education portfolio, it's a
massive,
heavy portfolio, right? So he said, well, I need as much help as I can get. And there's an argument to be made, right? As if you are the top dog, if you're the boss, everyone's going to want a piece of your time. So why not outsource? Why not delegate some work to aides?
Okay, I mean, when Tun Dr. Mahathir became Prime Minister for the second time around, that very famous Lat cartoon, do you guys remember that, of him stepping out of the car and saying, Potong Gaji?
Yeah. Right?
You remember that cartoon that made its rounds,
right,
again after
May
9th? Yeah. So once again, you've got Tun Dr. Mahathir here cracking the whip, especially given the tighter fiscal constraints faced by the government today. So I get it, but then now it is now up to these ministers with their fewer aides to then go out there and either be as effective or more effective than their predecessors with fewer resources. Again, the idea that we've been hearing from the Pakatan government is that they want to do more with less. How are they going to do that? That's a big, big ask.
You know, last time, under the previous administration, I've heard from several sources that these aides or these consultants were paid, the salaries were paid by private companies. It didn't fall under the ministry budget.
Oh.
Yeah, so they were consultants. And I'm not sure whether that's a practice going forward now, but if you're going to limit the new government to just have 10 aides, I guess you're right that that's definitely about cost cutting. I also do think it's also about making sure that there aren't that many avenues for leakages, right? Mm-hmm. The more people you have, perhaps it's harder for oversight.
Yeah. Or I guess in Economics 101, it's diseconomies of scale. There's a lot more communication and make sure there's no overlap. You know, tighter group, you know, at least in the textbook, tighter group means it's more efficient. But again, Mel, given that you pointed out, some of these portfolios are, you know, are consolidated and they're so much larger now. It's
big.
Like, how are they going to pull this off? You know, I guess we'll give them some time and hopefully they'll figure it out.
Do you think maybe they should look at the different portfolios and if you need more aides, in a way, more than 10 aides, you could put in a request?
Like a case-by-case basis.
Because you see, in this case, it's higher education is going to be absorbed in the whole education
industry. Already is.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. So it is a bigger portfolio, definitely.
Yeah, then it becomes a slippery slope, right? So if you do that, well, everybody's going to want more aides, and then what happens to the the budgeting, right? So yeah, it's a tremendously complex a balancing act right there. I don't envy the government of the day, especially, you know, having to work given the directives given by the current Prime Minister.
All right, we have a WhatsApp from Lim Kent, who says that he's curious to... He always thought the work was done by the Director General and crew, so why the need for so many aides? And he has a point here, because, you know, that there are people in the ministries. The machinery of the ministries will kick in to get the work done. Mm. So these aides, essentially, they're just aiding the minister, right, in his schedule, in his scheduling, in his day.
Yeah, now it also depends on which ministry you find yourself with. Now, Joyce, you and I, we are in some of these WhatsApp groups. I won't say which minister, but this one press officer, poor thing. I mean,
she works really hard.
She works really, really hard. August 31st, sending out statements.
Hats off to her.
All weekend long. Mm. But then for another ministry, like nothing. I don't think we've seen a single statement from that ministry. I won't say which one, but not a single statement since May 9th.
Hey,
just chilling.
Aides need public holidays too.
Exactly. So, ministers, you know, please, you know, do take care of your press officers. You know, we love them. They are an important link between your ministry and ours. Yeah, spare a thought for them.
So, so the 35 aides, maybe that's just on a rotational basis.
Yes. Oh, maybe.
You know, they get tired too. All right.
Mastering.
It's coming up to 7 o'clock right now. We've got the 7 o'clock news bulletin. But first, Sam and Dave to take you there with Sweet Soul Music. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.